Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So chapter 16, I'm just going to read the summary today. And some of the ladies who can't be here today would prefer that we wait for the full discussion on that so that they can participate. So we'll just read that preface and then we'll go on to chapter 17.
Boy, two phones.
Oh, yeah.
When the family...
If I'm at home, the landline rings as well. Okay. And then if they can't get me, they'll call my wife. Yeah, what are we doing here? Part two? Part two. So just to keep the theme, let's just read the summary. Chapter 16. Executing the Payabrata process of worship. As described in this chapter, because a deity, the mother of the demigods, was very afflicted, her husband, Kashyapa Muni, told her how to observe vows and austerities for the benefit of her sons. Since the demigods were not visible in the heavenly kingdom, their mother, a deity, because of separation from them, was very much aggrieved. One day, after many, many years, the great sage Kashyapa emerged from a trance of meditation and returned to his ashram. He saw that the ashram was no longer beautiful and that his wife was very morose. Everywhere in the ashram he saw signs of lamentation. The great sage therefore inquired from his wife about the well-being of the ashram and asked her why she looked so morose. After Aditi informed Kashyapa Muni about the ashram's well-being, she told him that she was lamenting for the absence of her sons. She then requested him to tell her how her sons could return and reoccupy their positions. She wanted all good fortune for her sons. Moved by Aditi's request, Kashyapa Muni instructed her in the philosophy of self-realization, the difference between matter and spirit, and how to be unaffected by material loss. But when he saw that Aditi was not satisfied, even after he had given these instructions, he advised her to worship Vasudev Janardhan. He assured her that only Lord Vasudev could satisfy her and fulfill all her desires. When Aditi thus expressed her desire to worship Lord Vasudev, Prajapati Kashyapa told her about a process of worship known as Payabrata, which is executed in 12 days. Lord Brahma had instructed him how to satisfy Lord Krishna by this process, and thus he advised his wife to observe this vow and its regulatory principles. So, of course, we last heard how the demigods disappeared, disguising themselves, and Bali Maharaj entered the heavenly kingdom and from there brought the three worlds under his control. And he performed 100 asvamedha sacrifices so that he could remain there in that position. So again, you know, that's a very interesting point in itself, that although he was under the shelter of the descendants of Bhrigu, the Brahmanas, he still had to come to the platform of purification himself individually. So, you know, although we remain under the shelter of the Guru, we don't just, you know, accept that that is sufficient, that, you know, therefore, just like, you know, everyone who comes to ISKCON takes shelter of Srila Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada will then advise, instruct everyone that they should take initiation, and following the principle of Om Pavitra Pavitra Va Sarva Vavasta Gatopi Va Yasmede Pundarika Ksham Sabhya Abhyantara Suchi, one should be trained in such a way that they can always think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially by chanting Hare Krishna and following the four regular principles and avoiding the 10 offences. That takes training. If one comes to that purified platform by the shelter and guidance of the spiritual master, then one is properly situated. One can't just take shelter of Prabhupada and not follow his instructions and expect to be purified. So here you see with Bali Maharaj, although he had the blessings of the Brahmana, he still had to perform these 100 Ashwamedha yajnas. So, now, I'll just read the part here, which especially the past times, and then but we won't go into the details of the Payabrata form of worship and, you know, discussion on the Garbhada, Samskara, etc. So chapter 16, we'll just read part of that. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, when the deity's sons, the demigods, had thus disappeared from heaven and the demons had occupied their places, Aditi lamenting, began lamenting as if she had no protector. After many, many days, the great powerful sage Kashyapa Muni arose from a trance of meditation and returned home to see the ashram of Aditi neither jubilant nor festival. Abreast of the Kurus, when Kashyapa Muni had been properly received and welcomed, he took his seat and then spoke as follows to his wife Aditi, who was very morose. O most gentle one, I wonder whether anything inauspicious has now taken place in regard to religious principles. The Brahmins, the people in general, who are subject to the winds of death. O my wife, who are very much attached to householder life, if the principles of religion, economic development, and satisfaction of the senses are properly followed in a household of life, one's activities are as good as those of a transcendentalist. I wonder whether there have been any discrepancies in following these principles. In his purport, he summarises that he says, the household of life is as good as the life of a yogi. Kashyapa Muni therefore inquired, he says, one should remain in household of life with the aim of understanding the ultimate goal of life, tadvajikasha, and then household of life is as good as the life of a yogi. Kashyapa Muni therefore inquired from his wife whether the principles of religion, economic development, and sense gratification were being properly followed in terms of the Shastric injunctions. As soon as one deviates from the injunctions of the Shastra, the purpose of household life is immediately lost in confusion. Translation. I wonder whether because of being too attached to the members of your family, you failed to properly receive uninvited guests and therefore were not welcomed, who therefore were not welcomed and went away. As Prabhupada says, if even an enemy comes to one's home, one should receive him in such a way that the guest will not forget that his host is an enemy. At least a seat and a glass of water should be offered so that the guests will not be displeased. The other day I heard that Prabhupada was saying that even if there is a snake in one's home, one should still feed it and give something, some water to drink.
And at one point of time they also want the snake to be killed, and Bhaktisiddhanta is happy that the snake is killed.
So
two opposite.
They are. You know, the understanding. So for instance,
you feed him, you give him water, then you kill him.
Well, that's what they did with Duryodhana, wasn't it? Duryodhana, while they're in the home, they treated them well, but then when the killing time was there, then they killed them. You don't confuse the two of them. But it shows you how much one should be careful of what one does in one's home, even to uninvited guests, everything should be done in the appropriate place and the appropriate time, but killing enemies in your home is, not recommended. I mean, even Krishna, when he killed Sisipal, he did so in such a way that it didn't disturb the
Rajasuya
Jagya, so he fulfilled both conditions, but followed all, the etiquettes of Shastra. So one should do that. It seems to be very difficult to do, but one should make all endeavours to follow properly. Of course, in an absolute emergency situation, then one regulation may override another. So homes from which guests go away without having been received, even with an offering of little water, are like those holes in the field, which are the homes of jackals.
What about catching the snake and removing his fangs and then let him go?
Yeah, you can do that.
Then he's not harmful anymore.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing to do. But that is left to the experts. So there are different things that can be done.
Like the devotees catch the rat and then let him go in the in the open field.
Yeah.
Here, call the council.
What's that?
Call the council.
Oh, chaste and auspicious woman, when I left home for other places, were you in so much anxiety that you did not offer oblations of ghee into the fire? By worshipping the fire and the brahmanas, a householder can achieve the desired goal of residing in the higher planets. For the sacrificial fire and the brahmanas are to be considered the mouth of Lord Vishnu, who is the supersoul of all the demigods. According to Vedic system, a fire sacrifice is held in order to offer oblations of ghee, grains, fruits, flowers, and so on, so that Lord Vishnu may eat and be satisfied. As said in Bhagavad Gita 9:26. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. Therefore all these items may be offered in the sacrificial fire and Lord Vishnu will be satisfied. Similarly, Brahmana Bhojana, feeding of the Brahmanas, is also recommended for when the Brahmanas eat sumptuously. Eat sumptuous remnants of food after Jagya. This is another way that Lord Vishnu himself eats. Therefore, the Vedic principles recommend that in every festival or ceremony, one offers oblations to the fire and gives sumptuous food to the brahmanas to eat. By such activities, a householder may be elevated to the heavenly planets and similar places in the higher planetary systems. O great-minded lady, are all your sons faring well? Seeing your withered face, I can perceive that your mind is not tranquil. How is this so? Aditi said, O my respected Brahmana husband, all is well with the Brahmanas, the cows, religion, and the welfare of other people. O master of the house, the three principles of Dharma, Artha, and Karma flourish in household life, which is consequently full of good fortune. O beloved husband, the fires, guests, servants, and beggars are all being properly cared for by me. Because I always think of you, there is no possibility that any of the religious principles will be neglected. And my Lord, since you are a Prajapati and are personally my instructor in the principles of religion, where is the possibility that all my desires will not be fulfilled? So, you know, that's very interesting there, of course, is that you see the etiquettes, as I was explaining class, Srimad Bhagavatam class the other day, that here, a deity is so elevated that she's the mother of the demigods. Very, very powerful, very elevated person. You know, more qualified than the career women of today. thousands and thousands of times more qualified than, you know, the career women who even may become prime minister or what have you. Still, the etiquette is that she takes shelter of her husband and assists him in making sure the religious principles and the goal of life are met in all circumstances, karma, dharma, artha, and moksha. So that is the natural system of the universe that is there all the way to the top and right through human society. And
even Lakshmi, Parvati, they always under the care of their husbands.
So of course there's, I didn't realise it at the time, I was giving my class on Srimad Bhagavatam the other day. Did you hear that one?
No.
I discuss about the relationship between men and women. That basing it upon the our discussion previously in this Bhaktivedanta, where the universe is set up in such a way that those who are the most qualified in sattva or vasuddha sattva, they are given the duty of maintaining and protecting the less qualified. This universe never has been or never will be set up in such a way that the less qualified are meant to be in charge and guide the more qualified. And the whole Varnashram system, so as we spoke, therefore Krishna spoke to the Raja Rishis, the Bhagavad Gita, the sun god, Manu, his sons, and it was passed down like that. So those who are most qualified protect and maintain and administer what should be done. And that holds true also for men and women, that the natural system of the universe is the natural relationship between men and women is that women assist their husbands who protect them and maintain them. That is the system that Krishna has established. Therefore, we see that Arjuna, you know, described that system in the Bhagavad Gita, that what happens if the women become unprotected by the men? You know, they lose their husbands and fathers in the war. Then the system is broken. That is the system. And the Varnashram system itself, the Brahmanas guide the Kshatriyas, who guide the Vaishyas, who guide the Sudras. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion now about gaining equality for women in ISKCON, which should be there, because Prabhupada, you know, he described that materially women's liberation, of course, is a cheating system by the men, so that they can actually enjoy with women and leave, and the women are left to look after the children, and their so-called liberation means that they, you know, they're given the choice of kill the child through abortion or what have you, or that they'll beg, you know, to be maintained or like that. And so, of course, quite often women may choose, in order to have the equal rights as men, that, okay, let me kill the child and then I can, you know, work on an equal basis with the men in the, you know, professional field. So, so that women are not forced into that situation, you know, they should be protected by men from being exploited by unscrupulous men who cheat them by saying that you've got some sort of women's liberation, when really they've you know, been forced into a very you know, degraded and terrible situation. So, so in ISKCON, you know, is meant to give protection to women. So, therefore, as I mentioned in my class, you know, in many instances, men in ISKCON have actually been exploitive of women, or you know, treated them in a abuse their natural rights within ISKCON, because in ISKCON women and men are seen equally. So one reporter asked Prabhupada, so in ISKCON the women follow the men, and Prabhupada said, no, in ISKCON the men and women follow Krishna equally. So, you know, so they have that equal right. And the men are supposed to guarantee the women that they have that equal right. You know, they're not to be subjugated by men. But in saying that, just as we don't disregard the principles of Varnashram, whereby those who are naturally capable of guiding and protecting others, the Brahmanas, we don't disregard the Varnashram, even though it can't be fully implemented, but we are creating a society of Brahmanas because they are the ones who can guide and protect society. So we don't ignore that. At the same time, we say that I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, but we still have to execute the activities of a Brahmana and maintain within ISKCON, just like deity worship is under the, you know, order, under the direction of the Brahmanas, yeah? Not the non-Brahmanas, even if they're Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis. So we don't disregard, nor do we disregard that because men and women have equal spiritual rights in ISKCON, that men should have no part to play in protecting women from unscrupulous men. And then the whole ISKCON is, as Prabhupada pointed out, it is the one place where women can come and be protected from exploitation from even their own family, from society, and so many unscrupulous men. So ISKCON gives them shelter and protection. Therefore, we have the Brahmacharini Ashram. So actually, men have that duty, and they cannot exploit or neglect their duty with regard to women within this movement. And that natural system should also be acknowledged by women. They should not, you know, expect that the men, in the name of equal rights, they should not expect that brahmanas should not give protection to those who are non-brahmanas. They should not expect that, you know, men should not give protection from women within our movement from unscrupulous men who, you know, want to exploit women. So naturally, of course, you know, they have their own abilities, but men still have a duty and an obligation according to the natural law. So therefore, you know, of course, I sort of wonder, you know, whether these things are taken into consideration when they have their Vaishnava meetings. But that one, is the natural system of Varnashram and the natural position of men and women and the, you know, top-down system that the universe has being accommodated just to, you know, or is it being sort of thrown out the door? You know, and then, you know, also with regard to the equal rights of women, then we have to consider that there are many, many women who actually want the situation where they're being protected and maintained by their husband, and they have the freedom to look after their children and enjoy the company of their friends and parents and you know, their life and you know, all the interests and activities and even work that they sometimes do, but in such a way that you know, it's not a there are many women who actually want that. You know, they actually enjoy that. Actually, sometimes I've said to some of the women, you know, in our congregation, I asked, who does the cooking? And they'll say, oh, I do all the cooking, myself and my mother, the lady. Mm. And so I say, oh, the husband's not helping. And they would say, you know, Gangisha, you know, don't mind, but I would not allow my husband. I like to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do this for my husband.
Mm.
You know, and you can see they're very happy in their position. They feel protected, maintained, and they enjoy being, you know, doing the things that are natural to them in association with all their friends and social life. That, you know, there's always people in their homes and everything like that. They deserve equal rights,
mm.
You know, because not that. somehow that should be treated as an inferior position. Actually, that is their right to follow that natural system. Other women or men should not force them to see that natural system as something that should be rejected as old-fashioned or you know, not part of ISKCON or not part of this world. They actually have that right to, you know. And what to speak of in Indian culture, you know, because Krishna consciousness is spreading all over the world. There are many cultures who will take up Krishna consciousness and that will keep their culture. And many cultures in around the world also accept that culture where the women actually like to be maintained and protected by the husband, look after the children, look after the family and those sort of affairs. And as Krishna consciousness expands, their right also has to be preserved.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yes, you know, we do have a long way to go as far as making sure that the spiritual rights of women within the movement, they have equal rights. And that hasn't been there in a sense that's, you know, there is a bit of bullying, a bit of silencing, you know, authorities are sort of oppressing, you know, these things have been there, you know, and opportunities are not being properly made on many different levels. So those things have to be looked into, but at the same time, there can't be a knee-jerk reaction that just goes completely against the philosophy of the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, which, you know, where we try to have, where the natural standard is there, the natural system is there. There's no harm to preserve the natural system and add Krishna consciousness. So as you see here, a deity, very, very elevated woman, but if you said to her, oh, you know, you're depending on your husband, you're disturbing our movement for women's rights. Do you think she would be happy with that? Not at all. In fact, you know, these are leading personalities that actually we're supposed to follow the example of people in the Bhagavatam, you know, as far as, you know, the natural system, the way this universe is set up by Krishna, we're supposed to follow them as far as what can be implemented in Kali Yuga in conjunction with the Sankirtan movement.
Currently, when they say, some women, they say, we don't like to cook, like something they want. So, and I'm just like, really, when speaking to Western women, you know, coming up in Krishna consciousness, standing if you're not, they don't like to cook. Like that. So, how to accommodate
that?
Well, that's
kind of
right.
Situation?
So,
the man's subtle mind, subtle body of the man.
No, if women, you know, if women don't like to cook and be in the home, and they want to be more, you know, in the workforce, and you know, not stuck around the home very much at all, because, you know, they're doing many things in their Krishna consciousness, and they like the role of you know, being, you know, earning, you know, an income, and being out and about. That should, their rights should also be maintained. You know, we don't, we're not trying to put it, you know, everyone in the same, you know, round pegs in a square hole sort of thing. You know, we're trying to you know, because we are in Kali Yuga, you know, there are many topsy turvy positions of men and women, brahmanas, chachas, vaishyas, sudras, you know, many things are topsy turvy. So, you know, where you know, what is naturally there, there's no need to disturb that. You know, we should, you know, especially if something's natural, there's no need to disturb that. But if somehow or another that system, that natural norm is not possible, then there's no reason why, because as it says in that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, the papayoni, the vaishyas, the sudras, the women and others, even lower than that, who don't follow any system of Varnashram or what have you, all of them can take shelter of the personality of Godhead and go back to Godhead. So, according to the Bhagavad Gita, you know, and the next verse is saying, you know, what to speak of the, you know, the kings and the brahmanas, what to speak of those who are properly situated in the Vedic system, right? So in other words, if people are naturally assisted, well-placed according to, you know, the Vedic situation, what to speak of them? They can take shelter. And if they're not, they can also take shelter. That's what those two verses are. So, you know, if the natural system is disturbed, there's no reason, there's no shastric evidence that they can't just, you know, engage as long as they're following the four regular principles, there's no reason why they can't. So, and the Sankirtan movement can accommodate that. So their rights should be looked after as well. Yeah. So my point is that, you know, there is a lot of work to be done for the equal rights of Vaishnavis within our movement, but it should not be done in such a way that an inexperienced person pushing that agenda tramples on the rights of some Vaishnavis or tries to put them all in the one sort of slot. It should be done. A person has to be quite Krishna conscious in order to, do such a thing. Now, this is another very important issue, is that Prabhupada, when he didn't select a certain group of ISKCON and say that, okay, we have to, place special emphasis here or there. His program was that if they accept what Prabhupada has given them, everyone can take shelter. The children, the women, the men, the brahmanas, the judges, the sudras, those who are, less than sudras, the animals, everyone can be nicely situated and benefit from, the internet, by pushing on the principles of Krishna consciousness. They automatically include everyone. So, now, first, therefore, the point is that, the idea is that we, so Prabhupada, he understood that, you can't do something with regard to the sannyasis. This can affect the grihasthas in this movement. Right? And in fact, we did have, circumstances where sannyasis and brahmacharis coming through in the bus group and, with Tamal Krishna Maharaj and what have you, somehow caused a bit of havoc. Okay? We can't have the grihasthas causing havoc for the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, etc. Therefore, what we've seen in the movement is that sometimes those who don't share the same, they're not following Prabhupada strictly, they can have a narrow-minded vision according to what's good for sannyasis, what's good for brahmacharis, what's good for grihasthas, what's good for women, To actually properly look after Vaishnavi requirements in ISKCON, one actually will have to follow what Prabhupada, his vision of things, to have that broader vision, that we can't do something towards Vaishnavis which is harmful for other Vaishnavis or for other members of ISKCON. Yeah.
Currently, there's a lot of discussion going on about the woman becoming a Diksha Guru.
Yeah.
Big, huge. So I'm just wondering, for example, GBC hasn't approved, and many sannyasis are against woman becoming a Diksha Guru, and some of them are supporting. It's like, I think majority against, something like that. There is a tug of war between these two.
Majority is opposing.
Opposing, yes, right. Majority, especially in India, is opposing. How many things?
I haven't tapped into that. Are they opposing because of things that Prabhupada has said, or?
Yeah, Prabhupada, there's no direct mention in Shastra, and there are not many, or there are no examples except liberated women who have been the Vaishnava gurus. Otherwise, everything's against Vaishnava, woman becoming guru. That is one side. On the other side, it is nowhere is mentioned strictly one shouldn't, woman shouldn't become a guru. At the same time, for the propagation of the movement, if women take up that role, it can be helpful. That is kind of, I don't know. I don't get into too much answering a brief understanding of what I know, but it must be much, much longer than this kind of argument.
Well, this is what the point that I was sort of hinting at in Srimad Bhagavatam and what we're getting at here, that, why not first establish the natural system?
Mm.
And have a big push for that by the whole movement, that the natural system we can do, and then the exceptions, of which this is an exception, we can do. So that would be, you know, if we're still trying to establish, you know, people are not even understanding the Bhagavatam, what is natural.
That's right, yeah.
Why not try and understand that first and then implement that and then the exceptions do, that we don't even understand the normal system, and then we just go, you know, a big launch into a big controversy about the exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a little, you know, it's too early. You can see the day coming, but the norm has to be there for the other things to fit in nicely. And that's my point. And if we push that agenda, my understanding is first, to me it appears to be, because of my conversation with many devotees over many years, I fail to see where devotees have a proper understanding of the Bhagavatam's norm. The men or the women. And I don't see how that's been, you know, really nicely established in ISKCON. And to me, that would be the first thing: establish the norm, and then do the exception.
Because one senior sannyasi told me that ISKCON forgets about the priorities. What is the real? What we really have to worry about, and everyone is worried about this issue, which is not so important in terms of propagation. It's not the main thing. So, pretty much towards what you're saying.
You'd be very. I gave a class on last Monday, I think it was.
Yeah, it was.
About that, if you want to hear that. But I discussed that with relationship to. Pretty much, I repeated most of it then anyway. But, you know, there's only so much you can say in the Bhagavatam. You know, trying to just get that message across that the universe, there's a natural system which Krishna set up between. You know, knowledge being from the top goes to the, you know, the most qualified, and gradually, you know, that is used to protect, maintain, and then disseminate that knowledge amongst the less qualified, who then protect the less qualified, like that. And that system is demonstrated not only in the way Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god, etc., like that, but the way and the way it was accepted by Raja Rishis, like that. And also by the way that the Varna Shram system and the Varna and the Ashram system is set up like that. You know, it is the most spiritually elevated who are looking after the least spiritually elevated. In the social structure, it is the most, you know, socially knowledgeable and unmotivated, you know, persons, the Brahmanas, who look after the rest of society, who have a lot of motivations and a narrow understanding, and who don't understand the Shastric opinion. Okay. So, and therefore, it's not by accident that, you know, a deity is taking shelter of her husband, even though she, that is the natural system of the universe. And we can't just disregard that. That, oh, okay, we're in Kali Yuga, you know, let's just throw that out. It doesn't exist, you know, it's not going to happen in Kali Yuga, so we can't introduce. Then we might as well say, let's not, you know, create a class of Brahmanas. And, you know, why accept knowledge from a guru? Everyone can have their opinion, you know, why should, you know, why all these natural things, which they're all Vedic, reject a lot of them, you know? So, that's the problem. You know, there is a reason that men and women, they cooperate socially in a particular way. And principally, it is this, that women are vulnerable, are more vulnerable than men, generally, especially when it comes to them being pregnant, raising children, or what have you, But in general, Prabhupada just gave this one example. He said, just to illustrate something which has pretty much been accepted by people all over the world for centuries, and that is, it's a really good example, that he says a 15, 16-year-old boy can travel all over the world by themselves, but a girl cannot. Now, that's been known in society for as long as society, and not just Vedic society, every society, even today. I hitchhiked all around Australia, that, very few women did, and many of them that did got murdered, raped, or what have you. As I hitchhiked around, I was propositioned by different men, driving the car 100 miles along the freeway, and they put their hand on your knee, pull over. Yeah, out in the middle of the desert, see, because they're thinking, I'll have my way, because otherwise I have to drop me in the desert. And then you can just drop me right here in the desert, mate. That's it. Bye-bye. I'm getting out. And I would. I'd just get right out of the car. But, so there's a vulnerability. Prabhupada's other point is that the fact that, as I explained, Prabhupada was saying that, there are some things I didn't mention in class, which are probably, you really got to pick your timing with and your audience.
And audience.
Yeah. Prabhupada was in an interview and he was saying that, the woman was asking Prabhupada, so what do you think about women's liberty? Because first she asked about the caste system. Prabhupada said, where do you see any evidence of that? Anyway, then she went, well, I'll ask you another question. What do you think about women's liberty? And Prabhupada said, that I do not like to discuss. Because they always give him, they always take it the wrong way and give him bad press and give that a Hare Krishna. So anyway, he said, because you've asked, he said, I only spoke about it the other day in class because it came up in the purport. So... he said, and he gave the example of how women are being cheated. And he said to the reporter, so you think this is good? This is your freedom? It's good? You have the choice. You kill your child or to beg. Very difficult to maintain your child. And, the one reporter was fumbling for an answer, but another reporter said, well, she's free to make the choice. And then Prabhupada said, therefore 34 ounces.
Therefore what?
34 ounces. Because Prabhupada would say that, in the studies of the brain of a man and the brain of a woman, that the man's brain is 62, the woman's brain has not been measured more than 34. Right? And therefore he's saying, the fact that you would make that decision, that my intelligent decision will be that I'll kill this child, which women all over the world are doing, you need to be protected so you never make that decision. Isn't it? In other words, that's evidence that if someone thinks, yes, for my superior intelligence, I am equal, I am deciding I should kill this child, so then I have the equal rights and the freedom. Now, someone should protect them from that, immature thinking, isn't it? And that's actually the duty, if someone cannot, and they unscrupulous men may say, yes, very good decision. Now, who are not the unscrupulous men? They're the men in ISKCON who have been trained up as Brahmanas to know, or Vaishnavas to know, and the women who know that you cannot kill the child. Now, so women need to be protected either from other women who have spiritual intelligence or men. It doesn't matter who, but they need to be, but the fact that they're making that decision in mass is an alarming indication that protection needs to be there, doesn't it? You can say, whoever you're going to protect, you can say, let women protect you, let men protect you, let the government protect you, but someone has to protect you from being so stupid. The best choice I can make is to kill that child. And now I'm free. As I said, you know, I didn't mention that in class. 34 hours.
So one may ask a question. When Prabhupada selected 12 gurus to follow him afterwards, how come he did not choose any of the women in that group?
Yeah, look, you know, there's. I won't get into all of that, but, you know, my general understanding, you know, is that, which I've been saying for many years, for many different controversies that come up, why not establish the norm and the basics first and try and let's see that we've got that. That will probably correct most other things. And when you've got the norm, then the exceptions, it's easier to then implement. But not the exceptions first. That's the nature of Kali Yuga. That's the basic principle. And we see this just right throughout the Bhagavatam. Now, to reject that principle that women take shelter of men as a social etiquette, even if they're very spiritually advanced or materially advanced, it makes no difference. It's still a good principle. To reject that, we're going to have to reject the majority of what we hear in the Bhagavatam and so much what we hear in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's a problem. Then what do we follow? And then what are we just picking and choosing? You know, then why, you know, if you look at Prabhupada's lectures on Varnasram, Prabhupada will say, you know, so much of Varnasram you can't implement. But if you listen to his lectures again and again and again, if he is talking to people how to correct the problems of the world, when he talks to the leaders, World Health Organization in Geneva, 1973, he's saying, you must implement this. Because, why is that? Because this is our teaching. We're trying to create brahmanas who will guide the rulers to make the proper decisions and to guide the vaishyas that there should be cow protection. And then in that meeting they said, well, what will happen if we all follow your system there? What will happen to business? And Prabhupada said, business will go on. It'll be just more simplified. Simple as that. You know, and when he means business, Prabhupada, when people say business, Prabhupada says business means that Brahmana has his business by which he maintains his life. Religious principles, charity. The Kshatriyas have principles. They cannot beg, they cannot accept charity, they can take taxes. The Vaishyas by cow protection, agriculture, like that. And the Sudras by serving those. They all have their business. So business going on means that everyone has their natural business. That's what he calls business. But it's just simplified. And it doesn't mean without technology, and it doesn't mean without industrialization, and it doesn't mean without planes and motor cars. But when there is a more God-centered society of not exploiting the resources of this world for so much sensory gratification, so much of the work that we do and resource and materials that we use will be reduced, you know, which will automatically reduce, you know, your too much carbon in the environment, too much pollution, you know, too much work, you know, too much energy. Most of it will reduce. It'll just simplify. So, you know, if we're rejecting Varnasram, you go through all of Prabhupada's lectures and he's saying, this is what we want. You follow this. It's in the Gita. You follow the natural system. So we're teaching this. And we're also teaching a natural system between men and women. It's very helpful. You know, any society that the Vaishnavas would give advice to, they would say the women need to be protected. Any society. If you know, the Vaishnavas ever have some input into government, they will say the women need to be protected and the men need to be trained you know, from birth to see all women as mother, you know, and you know, the girls are looked after by their father, they're looked after by their husband, they're looked after by their, you know, their elderly children, what have you, like that. So, you know, they'd have to reject a lot of our philosophy to sort of, you know, remove this natural system of men and women.
But with regard to this pollution, today's newspaper, the government has found a lot of illegal dumpings by the chemical companies, the chemical drums, after they use, they dumped in Australia. The government authorities are very, very, they were very surprised, you know, because their law is very strict. In spite of that, the chemical companies have found some dumping. Once they get to the exercise department, they're not going to, you know, they'll rip them off, the company. But how the company doesn't care.
No, they don't.
It's business,
care.
You know.
Yeah.
There's so many illegal drums dumped, but they didn't disclose where it is. I didn't go in detail.
Mm.
But I was surprised. Like, imagine what will happen in India, you know, where the rule is very much.
Yeah, they have to follow the Brahmanas, the Vaishyas, you know, the business people. So similarly in, you know, the councils in Victoria, because China used to get a lot of our recycled material, but because the Aussies were putting so much rubbish amongst the recycled, they stopped taking it. So then, now, they've just done it like, you know, the current affairs, they do a spy thing and they spy on, they follow the recycled trucks and they're just dumping it. So basically, people are paying their rates, they're paying extra money, a lot of money, to have so much recycled, and it's just going into the dump and causing a lot of pollutions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing being recycled now. Yeah. But they keep taking the money, you know. But it was only because... so you need you know, some Brahmanas to keep things honest, as I say. Mm. Anyway, so that's, you know, these things are there again. So let's just go through.
What about the women becoming GBC or temple presidents or other?
I don't think there's such a problem there. I think the main issue is Diksha Guru, and that's what I always thought would be the problem myself, you know. Otherwise, they're Guru. You know, there's no reason why not to see a Vaishnavi as Guru.
Mm.
But, you know, Diksha is, a different. So, oh my Lord, since you are Prajapati and are personally my instructor in the principles of religion, where is the possibility that all my desires will not be fulfilled? And look at that, how she understands that by assisting her husband, being guided by him, all her desires will be fulfilled. And that's the principle. It's not a position of exploitation. It's a position of... fulfillment of all one's desires. O son of Marici, because you're a great personality, you are equal toward all the demons and demigods who are born either from your body or from your mind and who possess one or another of the three qualities, sattva, raja or tamaguna. But although the supreme personality of Godhead, the supreme controller, is equal to all living entities, he is especially favourable to the devotees. Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 9:29. Kunteya Pratijani hi nami bhakta pranashiti. My dear son of Kunti, please declare that my devotee will never be vanquished. And then he quotes Bhagavad Gita 4:11. Actually, everyone is trying to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead in various ways, but according to the methods of approach, the Supreme Lord endows them with different benedictions. Thus the deity appealed to her husband by saying that since even the Supreme Controller favours his devotees, and since Indra, Kashyapa's devoted son, was in difficulty, Kashyapa should bestow his favour upon him. Therefore, most gentle Lord, kindly favour your maidservant. We have now been deprived of your opulence and residence by our competitors, the demons. Kindly give us protection. The demons, our formidably powerful enemies, have taken away our opulence, our beauty, our fame, and even our residence. Indeed, we have now been exiled and we are drowning in an ocean of trouble. Oh, best of sages, best of all those who grant auspicious benedictions, please consider our situation and bestow upon my sons the benedictions by which they can regain what they have lost. Sukadeva Goswami continued. When Kashyapa Muni was thus requested by a deity, he slightly smiled. Alas, he said, how powerful is the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu by which the entire world is bound by affection for children. And so, a very similar instruction that what Krishna gave to Arjuna in the beginning, in fact, the exact same instruction. You are speaking like a learned person, you know, with noble objectives, but actually, no learned person talks about, you know, the body and bodily relationships as having any real significance. Therefore, you're a fool. Kashyapa Muni continued, what is the material body made of? What is the material body made of five elements? It is different from the spirit soul. Indeed, the spirit soul is completely different from the material elements from which the body is made. But because of a bodily attachment, one is regarded as a husband or son. These illusory relationships are caused by misunderstanding. And of course, you know, in relationship to Vaishnava, Vaishnavi, you know, situation, husband, wife, sons, everything in ISKCON, we also have to be careful of not coming onto the bodily platform of life, identifying myself as a man, as a woman. At the same time that, you know, so, you know, this is the very difficult thing about the Gita that Krishna is telling Arjuna, don't identify yourself with that body. Yet, he also explains, but because you're in that body, you should use those your natural situation in the service of the Lord. Okay? So, one should not identify, women should not identify, or men should not identify with the body, but we should use our natural situation according to the Shastras in the service of the Lord. Yeah. So, one should not consider oneself inferior or superior on the bodily platform. Men should not consider themselves superior to women in ISKCON on the bodily platform. And women should not consider themselves inferior to men in ISKCON on the bodily platform. You know, that verse 520, that, you know, a learned brahmana, one who's on the Brahminic, you know, Brahman platform, they see equally a cow, you know, a brahmana, a dog eater, you know, a man, a woman, they see equally as a spirit soul. So, at the same time, we don't embrace a tiger as we would embrace a brahmana. We have to actually accommodate the particular bodies that are there, even though our vision is spiritual. We actually have to accommodate that a Vaishnava is in the body of a man and a Vaishnavi is in the body of a woman. And that is not an illusory position. If one is seeing them as a spirit soul, you know, with equal rights to follow Krishna, become Krishna, and to, you know, see their spiritual advancement according to their spiritual qualifications, not according to their body, you know, so that's the balancing act. And this is where things can go wrong. It's the same problem. So it's the same thing we're learning from the Gita. And as you see, as we were saying last week, that, you know, all of these things are in the Gita, the whole concept, you know, everything. Even the most, what appears to be very complex situations in ISKCON, controversial, you know, can't see the way, it comes down to the same instructions that are there in the Gita. You know, everything, you can answer everything from there. So, So first of all, Kashyapa is, you know, as with Krishna, saying that this is foolish, you know, what is this body, you know, why you don't attach so much importance to it, and bringing it to the spiritual platform. But still, he's going to treat her as a dependent upon him. But not according to the bodily platform, but, you know, the social etiquette should be followed. But as we see with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, with Ramananda Roya, you know, the social etiquette is that one who is born in the, you know, the Grihastha and the, I think it was a Kayastha or something, like, you know, sometimes it's sort of a bit more like merchant, a bit of a mixture. They should not really give instructions to a sannyasi, especially someone like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to show that, you know, when there is such a particularly notable advancement, it would be a great shame that Ramananda Raya could not speak that transcendental subject matter for the benefit of the whole world. And it's so pleasing to hear that, you know, why not hear such nectar from, you know, which put Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into transcendental ecstasy. So we see that, and therefore what we're saying also, you know, in the case that in Vedic times, even in our sampradaya, when women showed, you know, extraordinary spiritual situation, then the normal etiquettes were waived and they initiated and did so many things. So we follow that principle, there is no doubt. But they were exceptions rather than the norm. Ramananda Roya was also an exception rather than the norm. But at the same time, it did set the precedent that one does not have to be born in a Brahmana family. The people from China, people from America, people from Africa, if they know the science of Gita, they can be seen as a Brahmana and a Vaishnava and be guru and preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So, but although that's there, even though, you know, we can accept, you know, those who, anyone who's teaching nicely the Gita within our society, it doesn't mean they're all qualified to be Diksha Guru. That's a whole different category, you know. So the principle is there in our movement, but, you know, you still got to deal with it carefully. You know, Haridas Thakur, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who were rejected. So it shows, but, you know, if someone's chanting 300 million, what's that, 300,000 names a day, okay, there's some exceptional quality there. But so, you know, again, you can see that in our movement, we do waive the norms, but, you know, in exceptional cases, and also even all across the board. So the people from anywhere in the world, no matter what their birth is, if they become properly guided, they can become guru and preach Krishna consciousness. But still, they don't all become initiated gurus.
Just I remember Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they didn't initiate quite some time. They asked Gopalabhatta Goswami to initiate because of the social norm, because
yes.
And after, when the society became a bit more okay, then only I think they started initiating till then, because Gopalabhatta Goswami was a proper Brahmin family and he was not associated with Muslims. And he became the initiating guru even though they were senior and they were like the guru. Then, you know, they taken into account the social circumstances.
They did. They took into account the social norms. That's right. And so, you know, and therefore, you know, although Ramananda Roya was given the opportunity, he was very hesitant.
Yeah.
And you know, and you know, that should be the mood, that be very careful about, you know, just disrupting. As we said, if we're trying to present a norm in society, Varnashrama is a norm. That in any society of humans, you will naturally have the intelligence, you know, the highest, very knowledgeable, you know, the brains to guide and see very clearly according to scripture, the chakshus, the vaishyas, that's natural, it's there. You know, you can't remove that even if you try. But it needs a little training to put it back into shape to whatever it can be. And simple living, high thinking, looking after cows, you know, looking after the land, looking, you know, growing your own foods and your own grains. We want to encourage these normal things. As Prabhupada did when he spoke to the world leaders, he told them, you know. But one of the other norms is the family life. That actually, in ISKCON, marriage is compulsory. Right? But sannyasa is also compulsory. So, you know, but one still has to be qualified, you know. So sannyasa is considered compulsory, but one has to be very qualified because it's very dangerous. But it's not an option. You're supposed to actually come to that point, you know. You're not supposed to, you know, well, you know, it's actually, Prabhupada mentions it several times in his books, it's compulsory. Grihastha, marriage is compulsory in our movement. That we want, you know, we don't want any men and women living together. We don't want anyone having, you know, who's an initiated devotee, having any illicit sex. And if they're not married and they're having sex and it's not for children, it's illicit. So, you know, marriage is compulsory. And if there's marriage, generally, and of course there are exceptions, there are many exceptions in this day and age, but generally, you know, the predominant will be marriage between men and women, but there may be other marriages, you know, between those who are. But that's okay as long as you're following the four regular principles. You know. So, if we're trying to, you know, present the norm, we have to be very, very careful about doing things which are, you know, very rarely done. You know, they're sort of an exception to the norm. They go against the norm. We have to be very careful to present such a strong precedent, because what happens is that in Kali Yuga, the last thing, the very last thing on the agenda of anyone in Kali Yuga is to do the normal thing.
Mm. Yes. Everyone wants to be an inventive person.
The radical thing,
yeah.
Top of the list.
The copying problem,
yeah.
Copying each other.
You know,
everyone comes, someone does something.
They say, you know, like their philosophy is, in love, what's the question of cheating, or where are the question of rules and regulations when it comes to love? That's what they say, this, you know. So, you know, if your heart's in it, whatever it is, how can you put rules and regulations where there's love? Is it? So, we have to be very careful to, you know, we don't open the floodgates to a whole lot of people who want to come to ISKCON, particularly because we don't care about the norm anymore.
Mm.
That's a danger. That's a big danger.
And the norm is also coming down to.
Of the norm?
The norm.
The
present norm is not the norm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And then that becomes the norm, present.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually, the standard is here.
Yeah. So, in Vedic culture, God consciousness was the norm. Now we have to fight against that and introduce God consciousness and God sensitiveness to society as far as we can. It is reducing, it reduced from Satya Yuga to Dwapara, you know, Treta Dwapara, and in Kali it is reducing. But, you know, our Sankirtan movement is to try and keep that norm of God consciousness, a God-centered society, as long as we can. And all norms within God consciousness should be kept as long as we can, Just because it's reducing, 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 we don't say, okay, God consciousness is reducing. What can we do? Okay, let's give up and let everyone just do what they're going to do, and we'll accommodate the non. You know, then why have a movement?
That's what is happening outside.
I'm not having a go at you.
Yeah.
I get very.
This is a bit funny. Once in Devamurthy Maharaj's lecture, he said, one guy told, Devamurthy Maharaj, and sometimes he talks very frankly all his experience.
Mm.
So one of these guys, the nuns I'm saying, came up to Devamurthy. They had a discussion on that.
Mm.
And then during the talk, Devamurthy Maharaj said, what kind of person are you like that? He said, I'm a very good person.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, how do you say that you're a good person?
Mm.
He said, see, Swamiji, I don't park my car in a disabled parking.
There you go.
Okay, one. I don't molest small children.
No, there you go.
Don't you think that these
children... What about big children? No, I go.
That makes me that, so I'm a good person. I'm like in the mode of good.
Yeah, he's got it.
I don't know answer them when I said...
Two points out of... You know, say 500 different qualifications, I guess.
More than goodness problem. More than goodness.
At least he's not in the red.
So, this is outside situation is very scary. You know?
That's right, yeah.
Do you get to contribute your views in all these hot topics?
I got invited in the sense that I noticed that a lot of devotees got a text, you know, we're having a Vaishnavi... you know, discussion, I think this Sunday in the theatre or something. Did you get a text? And my wife and I got a text, and she spoke to a few people. So a few people got a text, you know. It's this Sunday they're having in there. Yeah,
what is that mean,
Prabhu? A Vaishnavi
conference. Conference?
Discussion.
Vaishnavi conference.
Yeah. But see, you know... When you've got very junior devotees taking the lead in such a thing, and, you know, someone who's, you know, been around for 40 years, who's a marriage celebrant, who discusses with every devotee who's thinking of marriage, who discusses practically everyone's difficulties in marriage, you know, they ask me, please, you know, we're having some trouble. To just be invited as like to just sit in the background and listen and put your hand up and ask the old question now and then, to me that doesn't seem that they're actually really, you know, have doing things properly to me, you know. That's not the way you do things. It's more about, okay, you know, other things, but I don't want to get into it. But it just doesn't seem right to me that if you really think there's such a, you know, you're really serious about making progress in a very serious issue, you know, which it is, that you wouldn't include properly, you know, significant persons within the temple apart from, you know, not really, you know, they're not creating, you know, a proper forum for discussion, you know. I mean, so, this is what I'm saying. If that's a Vaishnavi discussion and I'm a man, I already feel disrespected by the younger girls who are running it. I already feel disrespected as a senior Vaishnava in the temple. I've been here for 40 years. I have five daughters. I'm married. Some of these people have no children. You know, they've not raised children in ISKCON. I think it's disrespectful just to, you know, be so offhand. So, you know, and I don't think any issue should be, you begin, you know, to me, as soon as we embark upon any venture or project or service, and the first thing we do is we're disrespectful to our seniors, you know, I never take part in that. I don't think people get very far when that's the beginning. And there are, I'm just thinking from my personal, stance, but I know that there are, several others that I think, amongst women and men who should be actually, given a proper voice in such an issue. And from my personal experience, as far as I understand, that such other Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis are also just, it's disrespectful that such an important topic is sort of, taken on by young devotees in a without much regard.
Is that tomorrow or what?
Yes, tomorrow.
Is it a Western trigger or Indian trigger?
I don't want to get into it too much, but,
I'm just seeing where it's coming in. Because, personally, the Indian trigger, they got a husband or their children, they will be carried. I'm just thinking where it is.
Look, again, it comes back to this, that we studied the Bhagavad Gita, we studied the Bhagavatam. And in our study of all the Prabhupada's teachings from the Vaishnava scriptures, we can see there is main things, main basic principles. One, we're not this body. Neither man nor the woman. We must do things in such a way that it's pleasing to Krishna, and we do that by learning that ability from Prabhupada, our acharyas, our senior god brothers and god sisters, and we try to serve in such a way that, we're not committing offences, and we are always, not proud, but, taking shoulder of, ISKCON in a proper way, that we're getting guidance and knowledge. So when those basic principles, that a person doesn't behave in that way, then, and that's the basis of how they do, a person's do their service, it always worries me as to, what is that person's vast knowledge and intelligence when the basics over so many years they're not interested in or they don't practice. It's a worry to me. If I see devotees very respectful to Prabhupada's books, they're relying heavily on, his statements, not their own intelligence. They're very respectful to senior devotees, they behave in a very humble way, acting where they feel that they've been authorized and instructed by senior authorities to just do this, what have you. Then it gives me a bit of confidence that something good will come from that. But if I don't see that basic thing, I never have confidence, and in the time that I've been a devotee, I've never really seen much come from those sort of things. We hear that unless empowered by Krishna, one cannot spread Krishna consciousness. These issues between men and women, or so many things, they've been discussed in Vaishnava circles for thousands of years. In Kali Yuga, all of a sudden, something which is a big issue, and it's a big issue all over the world, that is going to use, the Dr. Frog position. I know so much. You may know more, maybe twice as much as what I know. Still, I know enough. As we've studied, we're up to the eighth canto here, but we haven't gone away from the essential principles of the Gita, that as soon as one, gets onto the bodily platform of life, they're going to do something foolish, even though they're speaking all sorts of religious principles, isn't it? If someone identifies with the body and identifies others with the body, as Arjun did, or here as a deity began to do, it has to be corrected before the proper thing can be done. And then once that is corrected, then one has to use one's natural position in the service of the Lord. And that also takes the expertise of, you know, senior devotees to understand what is the natural position, because that can be debated, you know, into infinity as to what someone's natural position, especially in Kali Yuga. That takes a lot of expertise. You know, people were seeing the hippies as hippies, and Prabhupada was saying, well, I see some potential brahmanas here because I see detachment. You know, they're prepared to undergo austerities. You know, they're rejecting, superficial opulence, superficial religious principles. They want something more meaningful, some proper knowledge. You know, he saw that, you know, these people have the qualifications, the little training, guidance. They've got the proper qualifications, the desired qualifications to actually, you know, that they can become brahmanas. Others, you know, so that takes expertise for Prabhupada, and what he saw was correct. No one else could see that. Not even his godbrothers. In fact, even when he was preaching to them, they still saw fault. It took a lot of expertise to see what is the natural position of men and women in ISKCON within society, according to how they're situated now and how they should behave in ISKCON or in society. It takes a lot of expertise. No ordinary person is...
expertise does not come simply from reading books.
No, not from being a bookworm, that's right, you know. There must be the guidance of Krishna, the blessings of Krishna, and the blessings of Prabhupada and, you know, the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnavis. You know, one must be under proper shelter and act as an instrument in the hands of Krishna, not as, a proud person. So, these are basic principles. When they're not there, then, you know, they can be spotted a mile off, and then... You have doubts as to, you know, what can come of something.
So you're not going tomorrow then?
I have my services. I hope. I have some little children who, you know, I have to do their hair cutting and blessing, their Christian blessings, teach them how to offer their obeisances. So, you know, I would say in the last few years, whenever there's been a significant meeting, it's been held, I've got notice of it maybe a week, possibly two before it, and it's always been held on a weekend. Everyone knows I can't attend ceremonies. I'm booked out. Last weekend, you get 80 people. I can't just say to 80 people, you know, and all the people that come after them. You know, so, when they had the strategic meetings on the farm, I would have loved to have gone to those. But I was just so booked out. But there was no one accommodated. Well, Ganga can't be here. He's been around for 40 years. Perhaps we should keep him in mind. Huh? Nothing. He's not here? Okay, he's got, then just leave him here. I've got ceremonies tomorrow, so, you know, I can't attend. My wife, she can't attend. So we'll just get left out. And no one will come after, no one will come up to me, as with other meetings, and say, you know, what is your opinion on this? You just get left out. And to me, that's suspect. You know, to me, you know, say if you get left out, someone would say, oh, well, we really should have had your input, and somehow you obviously had services. Can we make some arrangement to get some input? That would be proper. Now, if that's not even there, then, you know, there's, you're a bit doubtful of, you know, how things are being organized. When things are being organized like that, to me, it's a little disrespectful and a bit ad hoc. And maybe other things there. So, you know, I can't go, but, you know, these things are not proper.
Is it the organizer or the management room?
Yeah, I think from Mayapur, management rang up and said, oh, I'll do this meeting.
Maybe you should find a backup for your hair cutting ceremony, somebody else to do it.
Well, as I said, you know, if things are not being done properly, I'm a bit doubtful of the outcome of you know, an outcome anyway. Prabhupada says it's folly to be wise in a fool's paradise.
You got to
if people show a disinterest to hear from you, then why would I, you know, cancel all my meetings to go? If I've got all my ceremonies and people are obviously, when we had the strategic meetings, you know, no one came to me later and said, oh, what was your, you know, these are all very important meetings. You should have been, you know, you couldn't take part. You have some opinion of anything. No one came. So then obviously it didn't matter whether they heard from me or not. So if there's a disinterest to hear from someone and you speak, you'll come to ruin. If you speak to people who are not interested, then, you know, you'll cause yourself trouble.
But maybe you should give more importance to these meetings and give other services.
Oh, I have people. Importance. I have importance to it. So Krishna is making arrangements for me to, I spoke in class because, as I said, it was unusual. I didn't even know there was a meeting on till then, last Monday when I did my class. I found out, I think, the next day. But in the purport, it was about the issue of, you know, the men and women, men giving protection to women in society. And so I spoke, you know, particularly on that. Although, actually, Sukadeva said, oh, it's Lord Shiva's, you know, big Maha Shivaratri or something.
Mm.
Is to speak about that, or, you know, I don't speak about something, you know, particularly unless it's in the purport. You know, by Krishna's arrangement, I have, you know, I was able to give a nice class on that exact issue, although I didn't even know the issue was coming to Melbourne. And then here, because we're seeing this, how a deity is such a qualified person, then of course, and we have been discussing in the previous chapters about the natural system of the universe, you know, how it's a top, you know, begins from the top, and that's where the protection and the maintenance and the authorization is there, and then it comes down. In this universe, you won't see Krishna has set it up the other way, where those who are the least qualified are put in charge of disseminating, you know, what should be done and putting it, being in control and maintaining others. That's, Krishna doesn't set that up. So we've been discussing that, which is the points that I made in my class, Srimad Bhagavatam class, and the points that, because it's come up again here, making here. So I'm getting, you know, Krishna's given me an opportunity to have a voice, so I don't feel like I'm missing out. Anyone who wants to listen to these lectures can. But you know, because they're recorded, people can listen to them for time. But I'm just saying that I get the impression generally that, you know, if you know when people really want your input in a meeting, and you know when they really just, you know, feel obliged to invite you, but they don't really care what you say or whether you come or not. And everyone knows that I do ceremonies every weekend. And so to organise a meeting and give me a week's notice that there's an important meeting on, knowing that I can't come, to me, it's either foolish or disrespectful either way. It doesn't cut a lot of ice. So anyway, this study of the Bhagavatam is not just armchair reading. As you'll see, as you go through your life as a devotee, what you need to know to make very important decisions for your own spiritual life and for the even for the benefit of ISKCON itself, everything is here in these books, especially these books. And that's why we have, you know, here, you know, as you can see, there's the topic of a deity, very qualified woman, and yet still seeing the essential natural position that she should take child of her husband. We're not skipping over that, but we have to see how this is relevant for, you know, some of the Vaishnavis who weren't here today. You know, they particularly wanted me to not go too fast through this section because they want to hear this and they really enjoy these, you know, conversations we have. They'll listen to these lectures and, you know, when they come back, we'll continue. But it's very important that at least a section of an entire community, at least a section, has a thorough understanding of what's in Prabhupada's books. And they can relate that to the issues that are happening in the community. Now, if there are no properly, you know, if within a whole community you don't have any sufficiently very well-educated devotees in Prabhupada's books who can apply that to the issues that are going on in the community, you have a problem. Isn't it? You know, all hell can break loose. Sometimes.
Someone has sent me, I'm just looking for that, what Srila Prabhupada talked about his own books. It's a very good book. Srila Prabhupada is talking about his books. I was asking someone, are you reading my books? Then someone said, he said, no, you know. Then he said, do you know that I am reading my own books? Then that person is surprised. Then that person is surprised. Mm-hmm. Then that person might have thought, oh, Prabhupada is reading, that means, you know, he's trying to, you know, boast that his books. He said, no, every time when I write, it is not my writing. Krishna tells me.
He's reading, and not only is he regularly reading his books, but Prabhupada would say that I'm preaching from these books. And that's what you should do. I'm preaching from these books. Find that quote. That'd be good.
Sometimes they say that more harm is done by the wise people who do not speak up on the issues.
Well, for instance, it mentions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, I think it's the 20th chapter, that devotees are compared to, Vaishnavas are compared to waterfalls. Sometimes they flow and sometimes they don't. And he says that this indicates that, you know, the devotee of the Lord, it's their prerogative that sometimes they will speak and sometimes they will not. And, you know, so for instance, if Srila Prabhupada, when he was with the Christians, the Christian leaders, they wanted to move on from the topic of why you're killing animals. Let us talk about God and love of God. He's not going to speak. It's his prerogative. No, I will not speak that. You know, if you cannot understand that you're not this body and there is a spirit soul there, how? I will not speak further. I know. So that's his prerogative. And there's no use, you know, speaking when the person either is very disinclined to hear, they're not capable of understanding what you're saying, or you know, where there is some, say, very foolish situation, as Prabhupada says, where it's folly to be wise in a fool's paradise. Now, when you have very controversial issues, just like Prabhupada, the reporter asked him, what do you think about women's lib? Oh, that I do not want to speak about. Because he knows that I'll say something and you're not going to be able to understand it. I've got an audience of fools, apart from my disciples, like, you know, his disciples, both the men and women. You know, they were trying to convince the reporters what Prabhupada, both the men and women agreed wholeheartedly with Prabhupada. But he understood in this case, they're the ones who are going to actually put it into the media. And you have to be very, very careful. You know, you say something to a fool, what they write, and then the damage that they can do because they're so foolish. You have to be careful. You know, there are many different reasons why a devotee may or may not speak. And that's their prerogative. We're not getting paid to. We don't have advertisers. It's not as if we're going to let down our sponsors. You know, we're not going to, you know, get the sack. We don't have... You know, you can speak about something. In Krishna consciousness, if you think you have the right audience, you can speak. And if you don't, then you don't have to. Not only is it the right audience, is it the right time? You know? Even if it's the right audience, do they have other motivations by which, even though they understand, they're actually going to go out of the way to negate what you've said, even though they understand it, because it doesn't, you know? So there's so many different reasons. But, you know, you really have to make a person feel comfortable, don't you? You know, if you invite a man to a Vaishnavi, conference about rights of women, as a man, you're going to feel a little uncomfortable, aren't you? You know, even as a senior devotee, you really got to know your stuff. You've got to be careful what you say, because... You know, you're not speaking to the converted, you know, you might be speaking to, you know, people amongst them, people who think, you know, because you're a male, you may represent every bad thing that any foolish male has done in ISKCON, you're going to cop the flak for it. So you're already feeling a bit uncomfortable. So, anyway, somehow or another, Krishna's not allowing me to go because I have services, so I'll follow Krishna's lead.
Also, you're confident that nothing will come out of this meeting.
Oh, look, you know, eventually things will come. You know, it's a very important discussion, but, you know, if it's not handled properly, you just get a lot of anger, you know, and a lot of people can become very confused. You know, if it's not handled properly, young devotees, even, you know, devotees have been around for a while. You know, I have seen in ISKCON that if the people who have the authoritative position, even if they say the wrong thing, it will be accepted.
Right.
And if a person stands up to question it, they can be just really quickly humiliated amongst that audience, and then they just sort of go away. And then people... So, you know, things have to be done properly, otherwise, you know, it can create problems. So, yeah, it's a very important conversation. It should be put in the hands of the right people, and all the etiquette should be properly done between men and women, especially considering the conversation. And only then will some, you know, positive things come out. Otherwise, you know, there can be more problems created.
What's the subject title?
Well, it's you know, it's about, you know, the... looking after the interests of the Vaishnavis in ISKCON, which I have five daughters. And I'm probably one of the most pro, as far as from my experience in ISKCON, I haven't met another person who's ever seemed more pro on this subject than me, because I have five daughters and I've seen what they've gone through. And I wouldn't want any woman going through that, not having their, being basically oppressed and sometimes exploited. I wouldn't want anyone, So I'm very pro women's rights. But I certainly don't like to participate in, an immature attempt to approach such a subject. But I've never talked, I'm sure there are people, but I've not talked to in 40 years someone who's more pro women's rights than myself. And that's because they have five daughters and a wife. And my wife's got cancer, and, I don't see anyone.
She has got a cancer?
Yeah, she's had breast cancer for the last 10
Shri,
years.
Shri Murthy?
Yeah, Shri Murthy.
Really?
Yeah, it's already coming. And she's a naturopath, and every time, basically she's had, I've not seen support from any departments to, apart from nice families who individually, very, very helpful. But as far as from ISKCON's established support, whether locally or anywhere, nothing. It's about a zero. So, so when such things can proliferate, to me, there's a lot of cheap talk can go on. But I'm seeing firsthand that under very severe situations, nothing's being done. Now there's a lot of talk, but I know that it won't, it generally, if it, that comes down to the level where there's actually some practical implication for someone like my wife, who's a naturopath, who has no opportunity to practice that in an authorised way. Whereas quacks here and in retreats can actually give medical advice when they have no medical qualifications at all. I'm very pro because I've seen, the difficulties that women have and young children who are girls firsthand. And I've fought against it for 40 years. To just talk and, the women and the young girls will literally, my daughter, I would like to see more facility for my daughter, And a lot of talk and, I'm sure that basically she'll just be neglected as she always has been. So, there has to be some, don't get me wrong, I'm very pro, I want it more than anyone. And I remember, as a young devotee in Adelaide, I think I've mentioned this, but in the early days, the relationship between the adults and the children wasn't very functional in many cases. So the children would quite often sit with the women and the men would sit together without the children to eat the prasadam. If some of the leading devotees had a boy, they sometimes sat amongst the men.
Yeah.
But it's not generally a girl.
It's the same thing.
I always sat my daughters next to me because I wasn't going to put them through that because they just wanted to sit with their dad. And I was scoffed at. I remember sitting in a circle and all the men looking at me with a sneer on their faces, like, sort of devotee is that, you know. This same thing in Bhagavad Gita.
Like Chitraketu looking at Lord
Shiva. I'm saying he's a spirit soul in a girl's body. They have the right, their Krishna consciousness should not be judged on their body. But we have to accommodate the fact that, you know, we have to look after them as girls, women, mothers. We have to accommodate that. But the difficulty is that when you, for instance, if a grihastha and a brahmacharis, if they treat each other according to the proper etiquettes, one should not think they're in the bodily concept of life if they're seeing each other equally as spirit soul. Right? That's the teaching of the Gita. One should not see Arjuna as a grihastha. He was called by Krishna several times, you are sannyas. See? But Krishna treated him like a kshatriya. But spiritually, equal. So, if we, you know, if men deal with women, little girls, respectfully, as you would your daughter, you should not be seen as being in the bodily concept of life.
Sure.
And that was the problem. That was the early problem in ISKCON. That they were sneering at me. Here you are, you're giving all these classes. You in the bodily concept of life, or you've brought your girl, you know, how, you know, this is really sort of so much attachment. You haven't even got a boy like this, you know. So this is the sort of thing that ISKCON, that I've seen, and therefore I fought against all that because it's disgusting. It's horrible.
Is it the same thing that Chitraketu does to Lord Shiva, smiling at him, sitting, Parvati sitting on his lap and preaching?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, to see someone who's actually in spiritual consciousness, but because they're still following, you know, particular social norms and you know, identify that you're on the bodily concept, that's, you know, that's the danger. So, you know, this is just basic Bhagavad Gita teachings, right? Now, if we can't understand the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, how are we going to solve this problem? Because it's got to do with, you know, one, seeing men and women on the spiritual platform, right? That's the proper platform, because only a fool would identify as the bodily platform as the important issue. We see them on the spiritual platform as the most important issue. But, as Krishna did with Arjuna, even though he saw him as sannyas, he engaged him as a kshatriya, a family man. We engage the men as men, we engage the women as women, we engage the children as children. But that does not mean that one is on the bodily platform, if one, you know, like that. So this is the problem that ISKCON has struggled with. And if these basic tenets of the Gita is not being practiced, then what, you know, you can understand that there's going to be a problem. Right?
And what's the solution?
The solution is to actually
start Bhagavad Gita class every day.
How do we understand Gita? We hear Gita from devotees who have understood Gita.
We have to start,
isn't it? You know,
we have to start the Bhagavad Gita class every evening in the temple.
Well, we can. you hear Srimad Bhagavatam from those who, you know, so it's my duty to, you know, read Prabhupada's books, hear his lectures on these, hear his, you know, anything that Prabhupada has said related to any of these sections we have, and to have, you know, a broad perspective. That's my duty, because I'm only meant to present Prabhupada's understanding on this, Prabhupada's, you know, teachings in the Gita. If one, you know, does that, then, you know, transmitting that from, you know, Prabhupada through his books to, you know, the proper audience is you know, what's required. Otherwise, you know, just simply by one's intelligence and being a bookworm, it can't happen.
How can we get temples to have the Bhagavad Gita class in the evening, which Prabhupada...
That's another whole thing.
That has got nothing to do with man, woman, or anything. That
no, just, it doesn't.
That's just Prabhupada's formula.
Yeah, but it does indicate that the, say, enthusiasm and the reverence for Gita in our lives is lacking.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
It's lacking all over the world.
Yeah.
Every temple.
Yeah, even within, you know. So if that's a problem, then when the basic tenets of the Gita is, you know, there's nothing that happens in ISKCON or in the world which you can't find the answer to that problem, that complexity. There's nothing in the world that you can't look in the Gita and find, oh, here is Krishna's solution. Right? Prabhupada would say, he'd speak Gita. He'd say, Gita is the answer to everyone's problems, but there's no, you know, finding someone who has that enthusiasm. So, yeah. So, you know, as you can see, even though we're in the eighth canto, we're not trying to pose ourselves as somehow above the Bhagavad Gita. You know, we would never want to do that to the day we die, to ever think that, you know, now I'm so advanced, I've studied Prabhupada, I'm so much above the Gita now. You know, to the day you die, that's Krishna's instructions to Arjuna. You know, this is from the words, the mouth of God. You know, when will we ever feel that we have, you know, transcended the understanding of Krishna's words to Arjuna, you know, on spiritual topics, and how we exist in this world with a spiritual understanding? When will we ever come to that point? We become such a scholar, so prayer. And so, because Bhagavad Gita is our main preaching tool, then even as we're going through Srimad Bhagavatam, we're, you know, practicing seeing things according. So I'll just finish up here. So we'll just finish this purport. So let's see. Okay. My dear deity, engage in devotional service to the Supreme Person of Godhead, who is the master of everything, who can subdue everyone's enemies, and who sits within everyone's heart. Only that Supreme Person, Krishna or Vasudeva, can bestow all auspicious benedictions upon everyone, for he is the spiritual master of the universe. Now, this is exactly... we'll just read this, because this is exactly what we were talking about. That says, a deity made her appeal to a material husband. Of course, that is nice, but actually a material relative cannot do anything good for anyone. If anything good can be done, it is to be done by the Supreme Person of Godhead, Vasudeva. Therefore, Kashyapa Muni advised his wife, a deity, to begin worshipping Lord Vasudeva, who is situated in everyone's heart. He is the friend of everyone, and he is known as Janardhan, because he can kill all enemies. So, there are three modes of material nature, and above this, the transcendental material nature is another existence, which is called Sudasattva. Because of material contamination, even the mode of goodness is sometimes overpowered by passion and ignorance. But when one transcends the competition between these modes and engages himself in devotional service, he rises above the three modes. In that transcendental position, one is situated in pure consciousness. Above material nature is a position called Vasudeva, or freedom from the material contamination. Only in that position can one perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Thus, the Vasudeva condition fulfills the spiritual necessity. When one realizes Vasudeva, the Supreme Person of Godhead, he becomes most exalted. Paramatma is situated in everyone's heart, as confirmed Bhagavad Gita 10:10, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. 1861, the Supreme Lord, situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. 529, The sages knowing me is the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. Whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna, who will give the devotee intelligence to help him surpass all difficulties and return home back to Godhead. Kashyapa Muni advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna so that all her problems will be very easily solved. Thus Kashyapa Muni was an ideal spiritual master. He was not so foolish that he would present himself as an exalted personality as good as God. He was actually a bona fide guru because he advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva. One who trains his subordinate or disciple to worship Vasudeva is a truly bona fide spiritual master. The word Jagat Gurum is very important in this regard. Kashyapa Muni did not falsely declare himself to be Jagat Guru, although he actually was Jagat Guru because he advocated the cause of Vasudeva. Actually, Vasudeva is Jagat Guru, as clearly stated here. One who teaches the instructions of Vasudeva, Bhagavad Gita, is as good as Vasudeva Jagat Gurum. But when one does not teach this instruction as it is, declares himself Jagat Guru, he simply cheats the public. Krishna is Jagat Guru, and one who teaches the instruction of Krishna as it is, on behalf of Krishna, may be accepted as Jagat Guru. One who manufactures his own theories cannot be accepted. He becomes Jagat Guru falsely. And there exactly what we were saying. We cannot ever think that we're such an elevated devotee that we will sit and preach some form of God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, devotional service without reference to the Bhagavad Gita. Just with reference to our material intelligence and, you know, what seems to appease the general masses in ISKCON or the general masses outside of ISKCON, we can never preach according to that. If we must, you know, when it says surrender to Vasudeva, how do you know a devotee surrendered to Vasudeva? They're not going to speak anything which they cannot confirm from Gita. That's surrender. And someone says, oh, I'm so surrendered. How do I know? Say something. And they start speaking without reference to Krishna's Bhagavad Gita. So where's your surrender? You know, you go through Prabhupada's entire lecture system, all these conversations, you try and find where he's speaking without reference to Krishna. It doesn't happen. You find in his books, even in his purport, it doesn't happen. That's why he's Jagat Guru. You know, you hear, look at this purport. Krishna, Gita, Gita, Gita. That's why he's Jagat Guru. So, you know, this is the proper system. We have to learn what is Bhagavad Gita. If we learn what is Bhagavad Gita, we'll understand Srimad Bhagavatam. And we must only speak on all aspects of devotional service and all aspects of Krishna from the basis of Shastra, you know, from Krishna's teachings. If we do that, we're considered surrendered. And a person is actually qualified to be considered guru. Otherwise, they're just cheating the public, either within ISKCON or outside of ISKCON. So let's leave it there. Krishna very nicely confirmed what we're talking about. And let's see how life pans out.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.